Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane, and joining me is John Crumpler, also from the Texans Wire. That's where this whole operation originates, is from the Texans Wire. It's a Texans Wire podcast. John, good to be on with you.
Hey, man, I'm excited to be doing this. It's good to bring back the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And before I go any further, I want to really just thank Anthony Wood for all of his contributions and really being the driving force behind the Texans Talk podcast in 2019 and in 2020. He really got some great interviews on the podcast, and we hope to measure up to that standard, take the torch, and also continue to bear it and grow and not just get complacent and rest on someone else's laurels. So, Anthony Wood, thank you so much for doing a great job with the podcast.
I think we'll do a pretty good job. I think we can live up to his work.
I think we can. Yeah. But yeah, for sure. For sure. But Anthony, just wanted to give that little thanks there. All right. So, John, how are you feeling about the Houston Texans? Because this is what I see. I see people in Houston or have an affiliation with Houston Pro Sports as optimistic, as riding the positive energy. But then I see people outside of the Bayou City, just like, for example, the Touchdown Wire power rankings. Houston's 32nd in the power rankings. Other people aren't feeling it. But how are you feeling about it?
I am cautiously optimistic. I think that part of the pessimism around the team might be how the coaching hire process worked. It would not so, like, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Houston's, like, I guess their shortcomings in the past are also playing into that. I'm not really impressed with how Nick Caserio ran the coaching hire, but I'm okay with what we ended up with. There are some reasons for optimism, but I do think that the steps forward in 2022 are going to be more incremental, and the win total could look pretty similar.
Oh, so you think that Houston, you think they're in for a 4-win season again?
Mark, if I said the over-under on this team was 5.5 games next year, you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the over.
I'm taking the over? What if I said 6.5?
Over.
Over. I think I would go – oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think 6.5 is where it gets tough for me. I think the division – I mean, no one's set to take a step back. If anything, if Indianapolis can find more consistent quarterback play, you can make an argument they'll be better. Tennessee is going to be healthy this year. And Jacksonville could not possibly be worse than they were last year. I just still don't know where we're going to find the talent on the roster for wins. But also, that could just be coming from a place of, like I mentioned with the national media, it's just been a while since this team was successful consistently. And I think a lot of things would have to break right. And we're, as a fan base, I don't see people talking about the things that could potentially not break our way. So 6.5 is where I probably start to say under.
Right. And I took the over just because, you know, I figured I would take the over. But in terms of 6-7 wins, I think that that's probably pretty fair, because it seemed like if you could have taken the team from the final 5 games and had that play out throughout 2021, that would have been a 6-win team, I think. I don't think they would have fallen down to the Miami Dolphins. I think that would have been win 5, for example. Maybe they wouldn't. They would have beaten the Panthers, but that's what
if David Culley's. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Okay. Just pretend that this is family Thanksgiving, and you can talk over the top of me. It's okay.
Very fair. For those of you who don't know me, my name is John Crumpler. I'm a writer, a contributor over at the Texans Wire, and this is my first time podcasting, so bear with me while I get used to this. I was just going to say, if David Culley gets out of his own way, we beat the Patriots. That was a very winnable game that the coaching staff blew more than the defense or the offense.
Right, and that's what I'm saying is when I look at the Lovie Smith version, that there, I think 6-7 wins is reasonable. I think that there's a shot to complete the rebuild this season. And you got to go through free agency. You got to go through the draft. You really got to go through just off-season workouts and see who's going to participate and who's not and who had the ACL and who's got the hamstring and the weird shoulder surgery in July, you know, in late June, and just really the attrition that happens to the other teams on the schedule. Like I said, I think that's 7 wins. I'll say 7 wins on February the 23rd of 22. And if Cole Takes exposes it, then so be it. But I think that that is really the where this team can achieve this year.
I would agree with that. Under the condition that Davis Mills has to take a step forward, which I think we all really expect him to. He hasn't played a lot of football after high school. He didn't get a ton of time at Stanford, and then he ended up appearing in 13 games, and the last 5 starts for Houston were particularly impressive. If he takes the steps forward that we expect, I would agree with you that that's possible. I am concerned, or at least curious, to see how he responds to NFL defenses having more tape on him and more time to prepare, slash possibly just taking this team more seriously than they were under David Culley and with the huge, huge talent deficiencies we have last year. We've seen plenty of sophomore quarterbacks in this league go in the opposite direction. I think our season's really going to hinge on number 10, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, as it should be with the game. Because that's how pro football is constructed, is entirely around the quarterback. But Lovie Smith, it looks like he's got his guys. And the number one guy that he's been talking about has been Pep Hamilton. How much has Pep Hamilton been a selling point for some of these guys to come join the staff, like Tim Berbenick and George Warhop, and even for guys like Danny Barrett to stay?
I mean, I think he is the biggest win in the Houston coaching staff. If you look at the overall process, I touched on this earlier, it was a bit messy how they came to this conclusion. But even if you're a pessimist about the Texans hiring Lovie Smith, I think Pep Hamilton pushes us to fine. I'm curious to see how the team does. And if you're an optimist who's excited about bringing in Lovie Smith, who's a respected NFL head coach, I think it, like, his presence here pushes the staff to a good staff. I'm pretty excited that Pep's been able to bring in his own guys. I think we're going to see truly his offense. There's no Nick Caserio interference. I don't think Lovie Smith is going to have any interest in bothering Pep. There's a reason that people like Benjamin Albright are discussing him as a potential head coaching candidate next year. I think he's a rock star offensive coordinator hire. And if anyone's going to get the best out of Davis Mills, it's going to be Pep Hamilton in his second year with the young quarterback.
And I haven't had a chance to put this up on Texans Wire, but Lovie, when he was doing the, it seemed like on February 22nd, Tuesday, by the way, when they had the assistant coaches all talking, that Lovie Smith was doing junkets all over the place. And one of the radio stations that he interviewed was 1170 The Blitz in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on Jeremy Poplin's show, The Great Pop, by the way. It's because Lovie's got that connection to Tulsa with Tulsa University. And so he was on that station and he talked about how Pep Hamilton has been the quarterback whisperer. Do you think that that is a fair characterization of Pep?
I mean, I think he's earned it as much or more than anyone else in the NFL over the past 2 years. I mean, Justin Herbert came in. There were a lot of people who were pretty upset that the Los Angeles Chargers took him 7th overall. A lot of people, I mean, people didn't love his tape coming out of Oregon. Obviously, he had the physical attributes, and Pep Hamilton got a rookie of the year season out of him. You fast forward a year, David Culley, I mean, possibly the saving grace of his staff is he gets Pep Hamilton in at quarterback's coach, and he takes Davis Mills, who was, I believe, the 8th quarterback taken, 5 guys in the first round and 2 people, Kyle Trask and Kellen Mond right before him. And he lets Davis Mills look like, at least when you watch what happened on the field, the best rookie quarterback. We didn't win a lot of games, but there were some ugly rookie performances this year. And Houston is equally, if not more chaotic than any of those other environments. And a difference maker you can point to in 2 separate places now is Pep Hamilton. I would think he's earned it. Do you think so?
You have to also include what he's done, not just with the Chargers, but they brought him in as the offensive coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts too. So he was there with Andrew Luck in 2013 when the Colts really kind of broke through and had their most success in the Andrew Luck era. So I think that he's had some success. He's been, like you said, you look at Justin Herbert and Mills, he looked like someone that was, he just didn't look rattled. He looked like he was prepared for the starts, but, you know, obviously when you play a game, it has its own tenor and it goes off script. You got to improvise a little bit. And it seemed like we saw that from Mills in those last 5 starts, but Lovey has talked highly about Pep, and he said that he's wanted to get back together with Pep, who was the quarterback's coach for the Bears from 07 to 09. So you think about Rex Grossman and Kyle Orton, and then in that last year they got Jay Cutler. But Lovey just never had a chance to get back together with him, whether in the pros or in college until now. So Lovey's really high on him. And then you hear other guys talk about him, like Tim Bourbonek, who's the tight ends coach, who couldn't wait to get back together with him, who's considered him a mentor. He says he's like a big brother. But here's what fascinates me about Pep, John, is Tim Bourbonek said that Pep is a people person. So it's not just about coaching. He knows how to relate to people. So that means he's going to know how to relate to his staff as well as the players. And in putting him in that type of leadership role of offensive coordinator where he has a headset, I just wonder how he's going to elevate Houston's offense, especially with Tim Kelly gone.
I mean, it never hurts to have someone who is seemingly universally loved and that is talked about as a people person. And I think it's something that the Texans coaching staff has lacked, especially under the Bill O'Brien era. And we kind of saw David Culley turn the ship around there. And Culley was very likable, but he was not necessarily the most competent at times at what he was supposed to do. I think Pep Hamilton, the first time in a long time, the Houston Texans have a coach who is both likable by the fans and his own players, and by all means would appear to be extremely competent at what he does. I'm excited to see it. It's the one thing that makes me kind of have some hope for the 2022 season.
And if you can have Mills beat out whatever glass jaw they bring in free agency.
Marcus Mariota.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that I think would be good too, because that could help your red zone offense as well, as you've written in your articles. But if you could just have Mills and Hamilton, and it's their offense and it's their reps, I think that could be the foundation for something significant in 2022. And that's what I also think is intriguing about Pep, is he does come from that David Shaw coaching tree, that same system as your starting quarterback. So you have that blending of philosophies so that Mills knows what Hamilton's looking for.
Mark, can I ask you a question? You've been in this business a lot longer than I have. I was in high school when Pep was the offensive coordinator in Indianapolis, and I watched football, but I didn't pay attention to it or know how to analyze it at the same level as I do today, especially if keeping up with things league-wide. Do you understand why Pep Hamilton was let go of Indianapolis or by Indianapolis in 2015? Because the year prior, they had a top 10 offense. And in 2015, Andrew Luck only played 7 games. It looks like he might have been let go halfway through the season. Do you know the story of what happened there?
No, I haven't researched that yet.
Okay. I thought it was a very interesting point.
And then that killed it. That killed everything. That killed the optimism. But in 2015, though, Luck did get injured. And I know that that's partially why they struggled in 2015. Then that's how you had the Houston Texans sneak in as a dark horse for the wild card. But it was, I know that Luck, that was when he got injured, was that season.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why I'm so curious that he was let go when he didn't have the starting quarterback that he'd built his offense around. And that Andrew Luck had had so much success in the previous 2 years. So, I mean, fortune might have really favored Houston here that he hasn't advanced to an offensive coordinator or even a head coach by now since that point.
Right, and it is all about the signal caller. And it's about what type of weapons you have in place. And this is something that intrigues me about bringing Pep Hamilton in, is something that Tim Bourbonek said. He said in the media availability on February the 2nd that Pep, quote, Pep is a tight end driven offense for sure, even starting back from the Stanford days and carrying that into the Colt system as well. But it's a run first kind of operation. But Pep is going to do anything he can with the skill that we have here. Just score points, unquote. So I know that he mentioned it being a run-first kind of operation, but he also mentioned that it was a tight end-driven offense. So is this going to mean that Brevin Jordan's going to take a gigantic step in 2022?
I'm not sure it means that Brevin Jordan necessarily will take that step, but I think it means he's going to be asked to. And what I also think it means is we're going to see some significant investment at the tight end position this offseason. I believe Pharaoh Brown and Jordan Akins are their impending free agents, and I'd honestly be kind of surprised that they were brought back. I don't know how you feel about either of them returning.
They can go.
But it's, yeah, I would agree. I've seen enough, especially Pharaoh, just so many penalties this past season. It's a pretty great free agent class. It's heavy at the top, but Mike Gesicki, Zach Ertz, Dalton Schultz, I expect those guys to get paid money. And then after that, it's pretty deep, and you should be able to get some relative bargains. So I wouldn't be surprised if they sign a free agent or two. And then potentially look in the draft. You could take a guy like McBride out of Colorado State at 37 or potentially at 68 if he were to fall to there.
And I didn't think about this when you texted me the other day about Dalton Schultz. He comes from that same David Shaw system at Stanford. So he might be someone that the Texans would be interested in now that I think about it, because you'd have a Stanford quarterback throwing to a Stanford tight end run by a former Stanford coach. And that's what they had in Indianapolis with Andrew Luck throwing to Colby Fleener.
I actually believe that Dalton Schultz was coached at Stanford by people on this Texan staff too. If you want another wrinkle, they have history together. Let's see. Pep coached Schultz in Stanford when he was the offensive coordinator there. And that's from Jer over at Texans Unfiltered. He found that nugget, but there's a connection.
Yeah, I didn't think about it until just now, the Stanford connection. And I think that may be something worth looking at in terms of free agency, especially when you have the tight ends coach saying that Pep's offense is tight end driven, you know?
I mean, they need people to step up at that position, and they're going to have some money to spend, especially, we'll talk about this later, if they can get off of the Deshaun Watson contract. I think Dalton Schultz would make sense as a guy they'd be willing to overpay, because we've seen Houston loves having guys that they're comfortable with in the building. It doesn't appear to always just be about football. I think he would make sense as a target, because if it's a tight end driven offense, you need guys that you feel very, very confident are going to produce.
And Schultz is a guy that really invests in himself. Over in the off season, he went to that tight end university that Travis Kelce runs, for example. So he's someone that is looking to take the next step in his career and get that second contract, which really for guys is just passing a checkpoint of accomplishment. And he may be able to do that in Houston in a scheme he's familiar with. So yeah, I didn't think about it, but Dalton Schultz, I think that he's a candidate. And if I would have had the chance to make my four tight ends that Houston needs to watch in free agency that came out earlier this week, I would have added him for sure, because I think that he's someone they could target. But in order, you know, Houston, they're sitting pretty good right now with their salary cap space. They've got the 16th most in the league right now. But still, you've got some cut candidates, some guys that if you could, you know, offload their contracts, you could have some cap space. Who are some realistic cut candidates in your mind, John?
So I went over the cap before this to look at how to answer this question. And the biggest, the most obvious candidate is Marcus Cannon. They traded for him last offseason to play tackle. I think the idea was they could move Tyus Howard inside. That did not work in any capacity. I know Cannon didn't play the full season, but I'm not even sure how many games he played. But they can cut him with no dead money for $5.2 million. I think that's a no-brainer. I would strongly consider cutting Kaimi Fairbairn. I think that a rookie or even a league average kicker could produce accuracy numbers at an equal clip. Fairbairn he's not worth a top 10 kicker money that we're giving him, and you threw $3 million there. Eric Murray, we all know the story on him. He's been put in some bad positions over the last 2 years, but at the end of the day, he's not a great player. That would save $6 million against the cap. So with those three moves, you're looking at close to $14 million in savings and only $3 million dead money. Those would be my top three guys.
So you're willing to get rid of Kaimi Fairbairn, huh? Even though he kicked a 61-yard field goal, huh?
I mean, we've always known he has a huge leg. That's been the best part of his game since he joined the team. He can make a kick from any distance. It's just how reliably does he make that kick? And also, there's no reason to be paying a kicker that much money when we need to be taking shots on positions that will actually lead to wins and loss, or not losses, but lead to more wins. I think it would be just a better investment of the salary cap to invest elsewhere. Bring in a rookie, bring in a veteran. I don't really care. I'm tired of having a big Bill O'Brien kicker contract.
Yeah, it never made sense to me why they gave him that type of money, because he didn't make all pro or anything. Now, I understand you kind of need to have a clutch kicker, but only when it's paired. What I mean with a contract like that is when it's paired with a quarterback who's quality in the clutch. And if you don't have one of those and your offense is just run first, basically, then I don't know why you'd spend that much money on a kicker. I mean, even when things were good at quarterback, let's say, for Houston, I don't know that Kaimi warranted that level of a contract. My biggest thing with him is he's just always been, not to use a kicking term, but hit or miss. I mean, he's going to miss three extra points in a row for three games, or he's going to hit a 57-yard field goal right before halftime. It's just, it's that level of inconsistency that has been a microcosm, really, of what the Texans have endured over the last 23 months.
Yeah. No, I agree with all your points. It didn't make sense at the time. We don't have a need for him anymore, and he's never played at the level of money he's being given right now. I mean, you want to look at the rookies. Let me shout out my alma mater, Wake Forest. The most accurate kicker in NCAA history is draft eligible this year in Nick Skiba. Go get him as an unrestricted free agent or in the seventh round. Go get any rookie kicker or go sign a free agent. It's just, it's not a position we can afford to allocate significant resources to at this time.
What about Terrence Mitchell? Would you be willing to part with that cornerback?
How much would it save?
It would save $3.1 million, according to Over the Cap. But it would cost $250,000 in dead money. This is a pre-June 1st cut, by the way.
Mark, we can't talk about dead money. This team has, I think, twice as much dead money as the next closest in the league. They have made their bed, and I don't think they care about dead money in 2022, especially when they trade Watson, and if they trade Tunsil, it's going to be well over $50 million of the salary cap they aren't allowed to use. I think I'd be comfortable cutting him. I mean, he's not a spectacular player. I would probably prefer to cut Kevin Pierre-Lewis before him. That's $3.1 million in savings. He was one of the multiple Nick Caserio linebackers that were signed last season, and he almost exclusively played special teams. He never played more than 31% of the defensive snaps in any game.
Yeah.
Continue. I was just going to say, I'd rather thin down the linebacker depth, which we have a lot of really average guys, than corner, where we just have a few average guys and is probably the weakest position on the roster.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go, was I would rather get rid of Kevin Pierre-Lewis, although I'm not really, you know, have anything with Terrence Mitchell either, but it feels like linebacker is where you can get younger, whether in the draft or with Garrett Wallow's development, or if you want to continue with Neville Hewitt. And like you put on Texans Wire with Kamu Grugier-Hill, it seems like linebacker's taken care of. They experimented and found the pieces that worked, so you can part with Kevin Pierre-Lewis.
And if you do that, I mean, the four guys we just talked about, Marcus Cannon, Kaimi Fairbairn, Eric Murray, Kevin Pierre-Lewis, that's $17 million. That would double our cap space that's available. I think we're sitting at, I saw Texans cap put it at, I think, 15.6. It's somewhere between 15 and 17 right now. And, I mean, you add another $16 million, that should easily allow you to extend someone like Kamu Grugier-Hill. And you can also just be a bigger player in free agency. Suddenly, signing Dalton Schultz isn't going to take over half of your cap space. It becomes more manageable. Or signing a guy like Quandre Diggs, you know, these guys that are going to demand more money. And frankly, if we're our franchise is that we'd have to overpay, you can feasibly sign a contract or two like that. And that's the only way to start being competitive again, is to get good football players back in the building.
Yeah, but one of the ways they're going to have to do it for now is through the draft. And then you can go out and, you can get those other free agents, but you know, they've just got a big albatross on their neck, and we all know what it is with the Texans books. And until that gets cleared up, they are, you know, they're just going to have to
build the Cleveland Browns right now. Yeah.
So speaking of the draft, this is what I see in every mock draft. And I, you know, I put the mock drafts up there at Texans Wire so people can look at them. I don't know how I'm going to come up with any more ways to say NFL.com mocks Kayvon Thibodeau to the Texans. I mean, I may have to write it in Latin at some point just to, you know, come up with creative headlines. But these are the four guys that look like they get mocked to the Texans routinely. Kayvon Thibodeau, the defensive end from Oregon. I've seen Evan Neal, the Alabama tackle, mocked to the Texans. Kyle Hamilton, your guy from Notre Dame, the safety. And then we have Akeem from North Carolina State, the tackle, who gets mocked to the Texans. So of these four guys, where would you rank them?
I'll start at the bottom and work my way up. I do not expect Evan Neal to be a Houston Texan. I think all signs would indicate that we're going to be seeing him within the division in Jacksonville. I expect them to take a tackle, especially after hiring Doug Peterson. He's going to want Trevor Lawrence to succeed, and the best way to do that is by keeping him upright. So I don't think Evan Neal is going to be available. Akeem from NC State, this is now where we're going to get into personal preference. I do not want to take a tackle. I don't think tackle is going to make this a better football team immediately. And frankly, I'm tired of taking tackles and trying to address that position in Houston. I think working on defense and giving Lovie Smith some pieces that could actually allow his defense to succeed. They overachieved last year with minimal talent. We cannot ask him to do that again. They did a lot of that off of turnovers, and it's just not likely to be reproducible. They need more talent. I want to invest on the defense. And then you get to Kayvon Thibodeau and Kyle Hamilton. Those two guys are pretty even for me. I would personally be ecstatic with either of them. I like Hamilton by a hair because I think he's a sure thing. I think he's going to play in the league for a very long time. He seems to have low bust potential, and I think he could help a lot in the Tampa 2 and just give Lovey a true stud safety that they can move around. He can come down and tackle in the box. If you want to move him to nickel to like help out in the slot, you can for a play. And then you still have a great safety in the back end. He would instantly be the most talented player on this defense. And I'd love to have him here. But then, you know, the same thing's going to be said about Kayvon Thibodeau. He's a freak talent. He would make a huge difference across from Jonathan Greenard. We can't go wrong with either of them. I'm personally a huge fan of defensive back play and think that we can't afford to miss on the pick. So I like Hamilton by a hair.
Yeah, the way I look at it is I don't see Evan Neal getting to the Texans, but I've seen that in some of the mock drafts. I just don't know how, if he gets by Jacksonville, I just don't know how that happens. But I've seen one where Akeem Ekwonu gets taken number one overall. And in that scenario, I think that presents the most chaos in the top five picks, if that happens, because now Neal is out there, but I'm with you. I think that as it is today, if they went that pick with a tackle, it would be redundant. But how does the Laremy Tunsil situation affect that? And how does Titus Howard staying at tackle affect that? Or if they want to move him inside the guard? I think that's something that'll get solved throughout free agency, or whether or not they have Laremy Tunsil still on the roster. Now, I didn't put Aiden Hutchinson in there because I don't think that he gets by the Detroit Lions.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's too easy for them. It's too marketable. He's exactly what they need. He's a Lion.
Yeah. But it would be nice if Houston had that option. But even so, you know, I'm starting to see that it might be best for Houston in a situation of edge rusher or safety like Kyle Hamilton, and only Kyle Hamilton. Because if it's a cornerback like we saw earlier in the year, late towards the end of the season, where Derek Stingley would get mocked to Houston at number 3 overall, it's just gross.
I'd be despondent.
Yeah.
That would be such an overdraft.
Yeah, it really would. But with Hamilton, it feels like they would have a playmaker, and you could afford to miss out on Thibodeau, let's say. Because I think that Jonathan Grenard is going to take another step, and he was close in 2021. I think he's going to do it in 2022. I think that the defensive line is really, they're a young group, and I think that they're going to respond to Jacques Césaire's enthusiasm and just the mission of what playing as a rushman in Lovie Smith's defense is all about, that you can afford to go lean there, you know, not go get your war daddy like Kayvon Thibodeau, and instead invest in a utility guy like Kyle Hamilton. I'm starting, you know, in the beginning of the process, I thought it was, you know, stultifying to take Kyle Hamilton at number 3 overall. But now more and more, I'm starting to see the wisdom in adding a playmaking safety to this defense.
The only explanation for taking Kayvon Thibodeau across the board, it just seems you take him because he's the defensive end. And it's true. Edge rushers are more important than safeties on Super Bowl teams, towards wins. I understand positional value. But you go and you read these mock drafts, and it always strikes me. So Kyle Hamilton never falls lower than 8 to the Atlanta Falcons. And pretty much every blurb goes something like, the Atlanta Falcons sit tight and get the best player in the draft at 8. The only bad thing that anyone can say about Kyle Hamilton is that he plays safety. He would be a phenomenal player for this defense. And I agree. I think Grenard could take a step forward. There's a lot of depth at edge rusher, and they could sign one in free agency. This is not going to be a one-year rebuild. If they needed to win games next year, not that I don't want them to, obviously edge rusher is more important, but this is a process of finding extremely talented people to put on the football team, and Kyle Hamilton, I think, checks that box.
Well, let me ask you this. So this may be the situation Houston finds themselves in 2 years from now is, what if you have Hamilton on the roster, but you've moved on from Lovie Smith in the Tampa 2? I mean, you've still got a great piece to feature in your defense, right?
I don't think there's any system he can't play in. He's too smart of a player. His skill set's too versatile.
Can you say that of Thibodeau, though? In 2 years from now, and they've moved on from Lovie Smith, can you still say that about Thibodeau?
I don't know enough about Thibodeau and how the difference between playing a 3-4 edge rusher versus a 4-3 edge rusher. I would think it would be a minimal change as well. I mean, when you get guys that are just talented, but it wouldn't surprise me if Thibodeau is a really good player and Kyle Hamilton is the all-pro safety. And I want the all-pro regardless of what position they play.
Yeah, and that's really where Houston's at, is it's really about talent acquisition at this point and not so much picking for need, even though they have needs, but you just don't want to get locked into the anxiety of taking a need that you miss out on a foundational player.
Amen. Mark, question. You said Neil, you've seen mocks where the Jacksonville Jaguars opt for the NC State tackle. Would you take Evan Neal over Kyle Hamilton?
No.
Okay. If he fell there, I would actually look to trade the pick. I think that could be a really good situation for Houston, where you try to leverage the Jets and the Giants both need a tackle so bad. And if seemingly the consensus best one were to fall to three, I think maybe you pick up a 2 and a 4 for the Giants to leapfrog the Jets, or for the Jets just to move up and secure their guy.
Yeah, that's a different scenario. I thought in the abstract of Hamilton and Neal. But Nick Caserio has said that they're open for business at number 3 overall. And I think that that is a scenario that they would entertain, because it is about picking the best player, but also, like I said, not getting caught in the anxiety of having to take a player because of a need.
Yeah. I just brought that up because it's the only scenario where I could see somebody trading up for the 3rd pick. We're in a tough spot because there's no quarterback anybody's doing that for, and I expect that neither of the edge rushers really warrant someone moving up and paying significant draft capital to try to get to our spot.
Yeah, and Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft that came out, the 2.0, I don't think Kenny Pickett, he made it to number 18 overall to New Orleans. I mean, that's not even close to being able to fleece anybody for Kenny Pickett. So you kind of need the quarterbacks to do well in this pre-draft process, but there's no real clear-cut winners. I mean, these guys all look like, you know, second year type guys.
I do think a quarterback will go in the top 10. I just don't think one will go in the top 5. Someone always overdrafts a quarterback.
If you can get that scenario, if you could get a bidding war over a quarterback, then Houston would be able to pick up significant draft capital.
I mean, it would be a no-brainer to trade back if they can. They have, I mean, the theme of the pod so far, they have a huge talent deficiency. We need help. That would be great if Kenny Pickett, or honestly, his physical ceiling isn't high enough. Matt Corral is probably the guy who put enough on tape and has a high enough physical ceiling where maybe I could see if he were to crush the combine, crush interviews, that he could do it.
Yeah, and really with the situation with the combine and not exactly being what it was in 2020, let's say, it's just interesting, the whole pre-draft landscape. Now those pro days are pretty significant, and they have a lot more importance than they used to. But if Houston could get someone, one of those quarterbacks, to just, like you said, I saw in a mock draft where Kenny Pickett went number 6 overall to Carolina. If you could scare some quarterback needy team into needing to jump the Panthers, because I think you have the Jets at 4, Giants at 5, they're fine, they don't need a quarterback. So if you could scare them to move up to number 3 to take Kenny Pickett, I mean, you'd be cutting a fat hog.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Carolina is a real threat to go take a quarterback. Matt Rhule's coaching for his job. They've got people in the building with former head coaching experience. They've really underperformed based on their talent. I could see a scenario where that unfolds. It's not about need. I mean, there's plenty of people that want a quarterback. It's just, can one of these prospects break through? And we'll have to pray that they can.
Yeah, definitely. And also, since we're talking about scenarios, when do you think we'll know that Laremy Tunsil is done in Houston?
So I was looking at it. I'll start from a cap number. We would save a lot of money if we traded him after June 1st. But I don't think we care about that. I think the dead money thing is kind of a moot point here in Houston. If we want him, it's for picks, and it's so we can spend more on free agency. And because of the free agency point, I mean, these teams that need a tackle need to figure out how they're going to allocate their resources over the offseason. I'd imagine that any team that wants to acquire Laremy Tunsil or an upgrade at left tackle, they need to make a decision by March 16th. I can't – if we're going to trade him, he should be traded by free agency if we're going to get a great offer, because that's when teams are making their plans.
Yeah, they are. And then, as you mentioned, that might be a scenario to also look out for is post-June 1st, which really means training camp injury when you see that.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, like,
that's a good point.
On the whatever it's called, over the cap, you got trade and you can toggle between pre-June 1st trade, post-June 1st trade. And that's where there's 17.85 cap mm-hmm. savings and then 8.3 dead money. But I'm just saying, in terms of how you process it, post-June 1st means a training camp injury to somebody's starting left tackle.
That would be interesting. I mean, I would take that. I would like to see him traded. We need more pieces towards winning. We just need some shots in the dark, and you hope that you get a player who's equally as valuable or more valuable, and then some more draft picks on top of that. I'd like to see Tunsil traded. It is interesting when you've got, I think, hashtag Tunsil to the jungle was trending this week from Cincinnati fans. How would you feel about a potential trade with Cincinnati?
Do it. Just do it and pick up some picks. I think that that would work. That'd be beneficial for both sides. He could protect Joe Burrow. He can go back to being on a contender again. And Houston can pick up draft picks and potentially find some cap relief. By the way, Laremy Tunsil negotiated his own contract. That's what always fascinated me about his extension was, I think he worked with Jack Easterby too on that.
Well, he got a great contract. He was the highest paid offensive tackle in NFL history when he got that deal, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was.
That's insane. Yeah, he worked Easterby and Bill O'Brien on that deal. I'll never forget, I think in like the Monday morning quarterback that week, they mentioned that other GMs were furious that Bill O'Brien decided to reset the tackle market that way. I think it was like $3 or $4 million over the previous high in terms of APY.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in terms of a failed state, that's what the Texans were with Bill O'Brien as general manager, because O'Brien was just doing whatever to acquire whoever. And then they let Easterby in charge of the salary cap management and negotiating contracts, which, again, I think speaks to one of the problems with the Texans historically has been kind of like a Peter Principle type thing where guys get involved in roles that are way above their skill set. And then it proves to be problematic, because I think there's utility for Jack Easterby. I mean, yeah, I mean, New England won with him. He can't be all that bad. There's utility for Bill O'Brien, you know, but you don't put them as some sort of general managing, you know, duo, because that just leads to disastrous results and makes other NFL GMs mad.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk for days about the Jack Easterby, Bill O'Brien thing, and I think that's a great point, is this organization on the field and off the field doesn't always put people in their best position to succeed. Bill O'Brien was a fine NFL head coach, and he'd probably have another job today if he'd been fired after the 4-12 season in 2018 with Deshaun Watson. I think when you gave him that GM power, you really allowed him to self-destruct. And then equally Jack Easterby, I don't have a personal vendetta against the guy, but you just allow him to be so involved that we have to question, why are all of these bad things happening in the front office with him being there? So, yeah, shout out Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby for the Laremy Tunsil contract. What would you want for him?
I think that if you could get a third round pick at this point for Laremy Tunsil, that might be good.
A third?
A third, yeah. I'm going to be low. like Bill O'Brien.
I need at least two picks. I mean,
you can have a sixth and a seventh, conditional seventh then.
I'd have a really hard time doing that. I mean, even Cincinnati fans are talking about
the way I look at 31. It. He played five games, and he's not
sat out on purpose
season since he's been in Houston.
But he refused to play this past season, so that kind of has to change the dynamic when you have Nick Caserio on 6'10" saying whatever that injury was, and I don't think anyone doubts that Tunsil could have been playing for weeks at the end, and he just chose not to because it was a lost cause. He is a premier pass-blocking tight end on a relatively bad contract. It's not an albatross. It's not like we would be paying anyone to take it away, but he's probably being overpaid relative to what he can do, especially in the deficiencies in the run game. But if you get a team that's desperate, like Cincinnati, who just watched Joe Burrow get sacked 70 times in a season, you let the country see him writhing in pain with his knee on the ground because you couldn't do anything to stop the Rams, I think you could do a lot better than a third. I think teams would be lining up to acquire Laremy Tunsil for their third round pick.
I think he gets dealt in training camp when someone has an injury. That's when I think we're going to have to deal with the whole Tunsil thing, Willie or Woney, all throughout free agency and the draft and all of that. I think he gets dealt when someone gets hurt in training camp. And then at that point, you can ask for more than a third.
Yeah. Mark, who gets traded first, Laremy Tunsil or Deshaun Watson?
Deshaun Watson. I think Watson.
I think so too. Well, I'm actually going to disagree. I am very concerned about Watson's legal situation resolving in a way that I don't think it's going to resolve in a timely fashion, nor in a way that makes D4 walk out of this looking very good. And I don't think Nick Caserio is going to lower his asking price much. So I could actually see a stalemate there. And I think there's a bigger market for Laremy Tunsil than you might think.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm probably wrong. I just think that how he was acquired with the Texans was, our ideas at tackle didn't work out. Let's just overpay. And I think that's how he leaves too. I was wrong. I shouldn't have said a third. You always start out with something huge and then you work back from that. But, Houston needs to acquire top 100 picks. And if they can get, like I said, a third, then I like what Nick Caserio is able to do when he has draft packages like that available.
I mean, I've seen it proposed, and I don't know how realistic this is. I mean, neither of us work in NFL front offices, but my starting offer to Cincinnati is probably a third round pick this year and a one or a two next year so they can keep their top 60 picks to still help Joe Burrow even more. They get Tunsil at a very low cost. They think they can run it back while they have all these cheap contracts. And you try to get another day one, day two pick next year, which would probably be a better pick because I don't think Cincinnati's going back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is you try to pick up some 2023 type stuff if you can out of Tunsil. But, I stepped in it. I said I'd give him up for a third. So that's a shame on my part.
I won't hold you to that.
I know, but everyone else will. But it's okay. It's okay. You've been listening to the Texan Stock Podcast. Where can folks find you on Twitter, John?
You guys can follow me on Twitter @TexansDoc.
If you like talking about Houston, about the Texans, and a little bit of commentary on the medical education system, I'm a third-year medical student. Give me a follow. I love talking to people about the team.
And how many Omicron surgeries have you done in Discovery Green?
What? How many what surgeries have I done?
I was trying to be fancy and say elbow in doctor talk.
Oh, I thought you said Omicron. My brain went to COVID, and I was like, like Alecranon? Yeah, zero. But I do have my first clinical rotation coming up. I found out this week I'm starting on OBGYN, so I get to help deliver babies to start my clinical rotations.
Nice. Pretty cool. Delivering babies, yeah, and delivering realistic talk about the Houston Texans. We like it.
Me too, Mark.
All right. We're going to do this every week. It's going to debut on Thursdays. We'll have the link at Texans Wire on Thursday mornings. You can follow us on Apple and Stitcher. That's where you can find the Texans Talk podcast. I'm Mark Lane. He's John Crumpler. Thanks for listening.
Have a good morning, folks.